Welcome to the fusion of golf, music, sports, and entertainment. Golf Talk America with Tim Matthews and Frank Bassett. Take it away, boys.
And welcome in, everybody. Frank Bassett joining you this morning for a special edition, I should say, because of who's on with us or who you'll be hearing from. Mr. Tiger Woods, Tim Matthews is not in the house today, but he will be back next week when we cover the PNC father-son tournament out of Orlando, Florida. So in any case, it's a big week in golf because Tiger Woods tournament, the Hero World Challenge, is being contested in the Bahamas, at Albany in the Bahamas, to be exact. And what a gorgeous spot that is, and a very difficult place to play some really good golf, although some of the boys are doing a pretty good job. At the beginning of the week, Tiger sat before the media, all of us, and answered questions, and answered some pretty pointed questions regarding his career, his health, his thoughts on LIV Golf, his thoughts on Greg Norman, and he was about as an open and candid person as I've ever heard, and it was a very interesting interview, which we will bring to you, along with an interview from Justin Thomas and an interview from John Rahm early in the week regarding where they stand on the world of golf and everything going on and their games and what's going to happen in 2023. A lot of stuff going down. We'll be covering some of that the latter part of the month as we get into the Christmas spirit and the golf winds down. Next week, of course, again, the PNC father-son. This week, the Hero World Challenge, Albany in the Bahamas. And let's get right to it. Let's jump in and we'll hear first from John Rahm and then Justin Thomas. And then you'll hear at the end of the show, got to keep you interested, of Mr. Tiger Woods. So that being said, here we go.
We'll go ahead and get started. We'd like to welcome John Rahm to the interview room here. John, you're making your third start in the Hero World Challenge and great success with a win and a second place. Just some thoughts on being back here this week.
I'm happy to be back. I'm hoping the weather holds up a little bit more the rest of the week, but really delighted to be back. You know, it's been really fun every time I've come and played the tournament. It's supposed to be a relaxed week, and it always is. And maybe that's why I've played such good golf the last few times. It's a good golf course, always in good condition. Obviously, with how much water we've gotten the last few days, it's not going to be as fast and firm as it's been in the past, but, you know, still holds up. So looking forward to getting going.
I hope you guys had a good Thanksgiving holiday. Mm-hmm. You've had one start in the 22-23 season on tour with a top five finish. Just kind of some thoughts on how you're feeling about your game as you're heading into the week here.
Feeling good. I've played really good golf in the fall. I've said a couple times in the interviews leading in that it's almost like in the fall the scores are finally reflecting how I felt I was playing all year long. It just didn't quite happen up until pretty much a playoff. So, just excited to hopefully end the year on a strong note and get a bit of a break before we go back to Maui.
Okay. Well, with that, we'll take questions. We'll start with Cam right up. Come over here. Excuse me.
John, there was the news yesterday that you're going to be playing, you and Justin are going to be playing in the Monday night golf league, the tech-infused golf league. With Tiger and Rory.
Yeah.
What appeals to you about that specifically? What were your initial reactions and what are you looking forward to the most about it?
Well, there's a couple of things that caught my attention, right? The very first one is it's something so out of the box, right? No other sport has done this, right? And not many sports can have a virtual simulated league or tournament like we're gonna have, so to have the accessibility and the availability to be able to do it, it's incredible. And I think it done properly, it could be a really home run for all of us, not only for us as players, but for the audience as well. It's also an opportunity a true opportunity to grow the game and maybe reach to an audience that wasn't interested in golf as well, right? So and then as a gamer myself, the cyber aspect of things really, really gets my attention. So I'm really excited to get that first match going and see how it's going to be, right? I mean, being in an arena is not something we do ever, right? Maybe the 16th hole in Phoenix, and that's about it. So to have the spectators there, and I can't wait to see what it's going to look like, because the opportunity is there, and I think it shows the excitement that a lot of us have with seeing the names of the people that wanted to get involved in it. I think it's that right there should be a clear tell of, you know, the opportunity we have here.
Daniel?
With the PIP standings coming out last week, the player impact standings last week, apart from Tiger, they pretty closely align, close enough with the world rankings. Are you satisfied with how it's playing out?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what to respond to that. I mean, I'm not surprised I was in fifth place. Pretty much to be expected. It's not something I spend much time thinking about, right? I'm not going to change how I operate there today to go any higher or lower on the PIP. That's just not who I am. I'm here to win golf tournaments, and I'm not going to be doing anything extra to change that. So I know in the social media aspect of things, I might be a little or quite a bit behind a lot of people, but if you play good golf, things usually take care of themselves.
Right. It seems like the initial messaging was sort of that it was more social media, that was going to be more important than it actually is.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say, because if you're talking about impact, it's hard to not have Hideki in the top five, because he's a massive name in Asia, right? So it's just hard in how what the criteria is and how you look at it and how you use it. So I'm not nearly smart enough to figure that out. That's why there's people that they use. But because of of how hard it can be to understand and to make a proper program, I don't really, like I said, if you play good golf, it usually takes care of itself. And Rory, JT, myself, Jordan, we've all played good golf this year, right? Plus, if you think about it, the longer career you have, the more likely that your name is going to be known, right? So it's almost the more you're on tour, and if you keep playing good golf for a long time, that's, you know, you will be on that list eventually.
Okay, we'll go Shed, and then if you'd pass it to the front and back, and then we'll go back here and over here.
I shall. John, scheduling question for next year, are you starting at Kapalua? Have you figured out kind of how the elevated events and everything, how you're going to set up your schedule?
I could tell you my whole schedule right now. I'm not going to, but I already know my schedule. Yeah.
Okay. And you're comfortable with how it's going
to... Ask him.
Yeah. Ask Jeff. But you're comfortable with the amount of time that you're going to be spending?
It doesn't change much of what I do already. Okay. It really doesn't. I've said that before. I just need to adjust what tournaments I play, a couple of them. Like, I haven't played Hilton Head and Travelers in the past. But, you know, because of certain reasons, I will play. I'm glad to play. And it just changes the schedule a little bit. But if you look at my years in the past, it doesn't change the amount of weeks I play at all. So I played 19 tournaments last year from Kapalua till Tournament of Champions, and it's going to be the same this year. Because then I play European Tour on the fall, so... Again, it won't change.
Shed, if you'd pass it back behind you, we'll go 1, 2, 3, 4, and over here. I think I got everybody.
John, I feel popular today. Look at that.
John, since you talked about the world rankings in Dubai,
yes,
I mean, even Tiger's like kind of agrees with the whole thing. Do you feel vindicated? One, and the second question, which you said you were a gamer. What games do you like?
What was the first question? Sorry.
About the world rankings.
Yes.
Even Tigers talked about it, saying, like, you know, John played in Dubai, which was, like, had better players and so on.
Well, I think I got into the ranking a little bit more, and I think the changes accomplished some things and maybe solved a couple of problems that some people had with the rankings. But I think they created some new ones with properly and accurately valuing the higher ranked players in the world, right? I've already said it a couple of times, but, you know, having a deeper field doesn't mean, or a larger field doesn't mean it's a better tournament or a harder one to win, right? quality over quantity. That's been something that I've heard in life a lot, and I think it applies to this situation very, very well. So I think they could fix it. It could be a really good system. Nothing's perfect, but it could be a really, really good system once that is fixed. Yeah, and then game-wise, most of my life I've played Call of Duty, but since Kepa was born, I haven't really played. And lately on the road, I do have a Nintendo Switch that I don't always use, but I've been playing Zelda Breath of the Wild quite a bit, for people that know it. So that's what has been going on lately.
Get right here, and then we'll go back here.
John, obviously you reached world number one. You're the best golfer in the world. This year in particular, it's become clear that you're a vocal leader in the professional golf world. And I'm wondering if there was a moment where you realized that that was the case, where when you talk, people really listen.
Oh, this is a clear moment. Very clear. The second I won the U.S. Open, apparently I got all the credibility I needed. Before that, nobody cared. I got COVID, you know, Memorial happened, and I win the U.S. Open, and all of a sudden, my opinion matters. That's kind of how I went. So, yeah, I don't know if I became a leader then or not. It's just I feel like the public, and not necessarily seeing you guys, maybe some media outlets listened a little bit more to what I was saying.
Do you like that position?
I'm going to be me regardless, so I don't mind it. Yeah, I mean, if what I say can help people out, great. It doesn't really change. Again, I don't like to deviate, change, you know. I like to stay on my lane, and whatever that may be.
There's been a lot of intense talk about money in the world of golf last year. Live money, sponsor money, lots of money. When you get into the grind week in and week out and you're playing, how much do you think about money? Is it on your mind at all? Is it something you address once a year? How much do you think about it?
Zero. Listen, I'm in a very, 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 very privileged position in life. I'm no one to be thinking about money. Luckily, I've played really good golf, and I've had the platform to earn more money that I need. So, and obviously, when you start playing this game, you know if you play good, you're going to end up making money and be able to take care of yourself. But it's not why I started playing. It's not the reason why I play. So while I'm doing my schedule, while I'm practicing, and when I'm getting my things done, money is not really on my mind. If it was, I probably might have gone to live. Right? If money is your goal, that's clearly the path to go down. So I don't think about it. It's not, I don't let financial reasons, or golf-wise at least, I don't let it make my decisions, right? Every decision I make when it comes to golf is to become the best player I can become.
Bob, and then pass it here, and then we're going to... Okay. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm pretty sure you played with Tiger in the last round at the Masters this year. I'm just curious, looking back on the whole year, as little as he played, as hard as it was, do you remember anything from that day about noticing sort of the, you know, the determination that he had to have just been able to even do what he did this year?
I think the fact that we got put on the clock on 7 and he was somehow trying to speed up. I was looking at him like, we all looked at the official like, he can't walk any faster. Let's be honest. Like, he was already doing an amazing job trying to move up and down those hills. And we all joked around with the official. And then when he turned around, Tiger takes off. And I'm looking at my caddy like, well, I mean, this is incredible. I'm not going to mention much of how much we had to wait on the second shot on 8. But I think the fact that he actually still tried to speed up that much, even though he couldn't really walk. And then we see the reality afterwards, right? The cameras don't see. He puts on a bit of a show. By the camera, like, he's not going to show how much he's really hurting. When we finished scoring, just seeing him stand up and move around that room when there's nobody watching, there's a difference. Especially after playing 18 holes and after sitting down, when your legs cool off a little bit, it changes. It's really inspiring. I mean, how many surgeries has he had where he was written off? Right, he's done. He's not playing again, and he's not only come back in one tournament. Right, it seems right now that we might be reaching that point, but at this, I don't put anything past him. Like, he's surprised me before and surprised a lot of people before. So I'm hoping he can keep playing and can contend again, especially in major championships. But that Sunday is going to be a fun one to remember. Maybe because of my comments in the past, it was a lot more talkative that round. I don't know if he was just trying to prove a point to me or not, but he was a little bit more talkative, and he shared a lot of great stories, a lot of personal stories. I asked him a little bit about golf and parenting, and he was very receptive. What is it? What was the word? He was very open about it, and very respectful about it as well. So he, it was great. It was great. It'll be around. I'll remember for a long time.
I'm coming back to you. Go ahead, please.
A quick one on the money, and I appreciate where you stand on it and everything. But you won $400,000 your first tournament as a pro. Did that register with you?
I don't think it did. No.
And if it,
I'm still mad. I bogeyed 17 and then birdie 18 to not win. So, yeah, I was asked when I round finished, like, John, you could have made par and finished second for $700,000, and my answer was almost, I don't freaking care, right? Because again, I played a win, and that was the position I was at.
Was there any? Did you early on anyway in your career? Was there any differentiating between guaranteed money from contracts, what have you, and what you actually earned on the golf course? Did you?
Sorry, I couldn't quite hear you. Clearly.
That's okay.
Sorry.
When you were starting, did you draw a difference between, at least in your own head, whatever money you had from contracts with whatever money you actually earned on the golf course? Or was it none of it mattered?
I didn't really think about it, no. As an amateur, I played good enough to earn the opportunities I had to play in tour events. And I proved myself, right? So when I was turning pro, I had really, really good deals from certain brands to where money wasn't an issue. And I know a lot of people turn pro and money is an issue. That wasn't my case. So, like I said earlier, I wasn't thinking about it, right? My goal on those events was, when I turned pro, to hopefully win one of those six to get into the playoffs. That's what I was thinking. And worst case scenario, if I didn't win, earn my tour card, which I did. At that point, I already earned more money than my college mind could comprehend. I definitely can say there was a difference in between and before, you know. At that point, I knew I could go to Chipotle and order extra wok if I wanted to and not feel guilty about it.
You got to take the last three right here. One, two, and then Adam in the back.
Hey, John. With regard to Liv and Phil Mickelson, he obviously took a lot of criticism from a number of the players on the PGA Tour that stayed for, you know, his stance and being the face of Liv and whatnot. But is it inaccurate to say that him shaking the PGA Tour tree to some degree hasn't made a lot of players on the tour a lot more money as things have shaken out with the elevated events and et cetera, the more money that's come in?
I mean, I think on this side of things, we should be thankful that Liv happened. I don't know if those changes would have happened if Liv wasn't in the picture. So to an extent, yeah, we should be thankful.
What was your reaction? I know you have a unique relationship because you've got a really good relationship with him over the years. What was your reaction when you heard a lot of your PGA Tour colleagues last year lashing out at him pretty aggressively?
Well, listen, you're entitled to your own opinion. And it's not my place to judge what you think and where you're coming from, right? Phil is my friend, and I'm going to treat him as such. But, right, I understand why people think the way why people thought certain things. I may agree with it or not, but it's not my place to, you know, to tell him what to say and what not to say, obviously. So, yeah, I mean, some things I agree with, some things I didn't agree with.
Thank you. Okay, last two right here, and then we'll finish with Adam in the back. Nope, back one more over there.
John, sorry, you've always been very passionate about the game. When you do sit down at the end of this season and reflect on this year, is it going to be a good year for the game or a bad year for the game, given fractured relationships?
Oh, for the game of golf? Not my game?
No, generally.
I don't usually think about everybody else, but I try to... I don't think it was a bad year for golf. Yes, there is this certain division, but I think we're moving forward. I think the fans are getting, however you want to look at it, in one side or the other, you're getting a different product, right? So change can always be exciting. And like I said, on this side, a lot of the changes we owe to the appearance of Liv. So I don't think it's a bad thing. I just hope negative, let's say, feel that this whole thing has, right? The animosity goes away. I don't think there needs to be a lawsuit. I don't think each side needs to be saying anything negative about each other, right? If you want to try to coexist, coexist, and Liv can do their thing, and the PGA Tour can do their thing. But, you know, I just don't see the whole point of them saying something bad and then the PGA Tour responding in a way. When I mean them, it can be players, it can be Greg Norman, it can be anybody that's on that side, same as here, right? So that to me is just a bit of a waste of time, right? It's just Liv, exactly. I mean, they're going to do whatever they want, and on this side, we're going to do whatever we want. So at the end of the day, I think the fans are coming out on top.
Okay, we'll finish up with Adam.
Circling back to your schedule, are you going to, you say you know exactly what it's going to be, are you going to fulfill what the PGA Tour and Ryder Cup, DP World Tour, what you need to do? Is that part of your
plan? Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah. Okay. That's why I won't be playing, as in right now, I don't plan to play PGA Tour events in the fall so I can fulfill my European Tour commitments and play what I need to play over there. I plan to stay a member of both tours, for sure.
And given, well, not just be a member, but you're going to play all the elevated events that you have to?
We can opt out of one.
Right.
And, it doesn't always fall well into the schedule. And with me winning Mexico last year, that time of year, I'm going to have to rethink things. And Wells Fargo is the one that's teetering on the edge for me. I may or may not play that one. That's the only one. Every other one I'll play.
But when you say that money doesn't really matter, would you forego the pit money that you would earn because you'd rather have the flexibility?
Sorry, what? I can't.
Would you forego?
Can you get closer to your mic?
Sorry.
There you go.
Would you forego the flexibility? Would you forego the pit money to have the flexibility to skip some of those elevated events?
No, I mean, I want to play against the best players in the world, right? And listen, I'm saying I'm not playing for money. I'm also not stupid, okay? If I've earned it and all I have to do is play maybe two or three events I haven't played before for $20 million, I might make the effort and do it. It's an added motivation, but I'm not going to be, giving away millions of dollars just because I don't want to play one or two events. Again, it doesn't really change my schedule that much. If it was a massive change to where I'm, it would be a big change in my career or in my year, but it really isn't. So, but again, it is our choice. You can choose to do it and you can choose not to do it. So if somebody doesn't want to do it, then you just don't play and you acknowledge that you won't be getting a percentage of it. That's it.
And John, how do you look at this year, a year where you didn't win, weren't able to win a major, but, had certainly a good amount of success, but lost world number one. How do you summarize it?
Listen, it's not a bad year. I've won three times worldwide, and my percentage of top tens has stayed close to 50%. So I guess compared to my last few years, you can categorize it as bad, but it really isn't, right? And I would have had to play a heck of a year to maintain the number one with the way some other players have played. And it is what it is. I mean, it's not easy to get there. Is it a bad year? No. Could it have been better? Yes. And I think the only thing I would be thinking about to be better is my major championship performances being better. I made the cuts, yes, but in three of them I was non-existent in the weekend. And I really don't like that. So to be in contention on those Sundays is where you want to be and competing for wins. It's not easy to win them, but kind of like I did last year, right? Last year I was up there in all of them. So I will, that'll be the one thing, the one negative from the year that I'll be thinking of.
Okay. All right. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
Hey, everybody, Frank Bassett for Hole in One and Brickhouse Nutrition. And I got to tell you, I love what Tiger and Phil said. They both have said golf is a mental game. What happens between the tee and the pin depends on what's going on between your ears. Okay? That's why pros and just regular golfers out there are switching from the unhealthy crash and burn energy bars and drinks, the kind that I used to eat and drink all the time, to Hole in One bars. And they're taking strokes off their game. It's working, folks. Hole-in-One bars from Brickhouse Nutrition were formulated by a doctor to boost healthy, stable, 18-hole energy. No jitters, no crash. More importantly, They sharpen your focus and shave strokes off your game. I switched to hole-in-one bars, and let me tell you, outside of tasting very, very, very good, which some of the other bars tasted like I was eating the cardboard box instead of the bar, these bars taste great. So here's what I want you to do. I want you all to take the hole-in-one bars challenge. Switch from your energy bar or drink to hole-in-one bars, and you'll see improvement in your game instantly. I guarantee it. Let's get started, okay? We're going to give you 15% off your first order. Visit holeinonebar.com, promo code GOLF. Go to holeinonebar.com, use the promo code GOLF, and get 15% off of your first order. Folks, truthfully, all of us, but Tim and myself and the staff of Golf Talk America, have been eating these things, and they are fabulous. Hole-in-one bars from Brickhouse Nutrition. Get them today.
We'll get started. We'd like to welcome Justin Thomas into the interview room here at the Hero World Challenge. Justin, you know, a lot of weather to deal with today, as we look ahead to the rest of the week, what are you looking forward to accomplishing this week?
Yeah, hopefully the course will dry up quite a bit. That was some serious rain on that pro-am, so I'm bummed for the Ams that had to go through it after, you know, being here. But, there's only so much that Albany can do with the conditions and weather they were given. So, you know, hopefully get a little wind and some nice weather and dry it up. And we can produce some good golf this weekend.
Just the one start on tour during the fall portion of the season. How do you feel like the game is coming into the week?
Yeah, I feel like my game's in a pretty good spot. I mean, I had a very good amount of time off, more than normal. And although I played very poorly at the CJ Cup, I feel like I practiced very hard. I put in a lot of hard work in different areas the last week and a half or so. But, you know, not playing in a tournament for a while, there's always a little bit of rust you have to knock off. So the hope and the goal is to just knock it off as quickly as possible and just try to get into a little bit of a rhythm and make a bunch of birdies, because that's what you have to do out here.
All right, we'll take some questions out here. If you have a question, we'll get a microphone to you. We'll start with Dan.
I saw the announcement yesterday that you and John Rahm are going to be participating in the TGL with that and your sunscreen. You're doing a lot of stuff off the golf course. Was that always the plan, or is it sort of like now that you have had success and had a platform, those things are more appealing to you now, or has that always been the plan to sort of broaden like you have?
I think it's maybe a big picture. It's always in the plan somewhat, but in terms of what it is, you just don't know the opportunities that you're going to have. If you'd have told me when I was 18 years old, hey, you know, you're going to have a sunscreen line because you're going to have melanoma when you're 24, I would have been like, nah, I'm good. I'd rather not have melanoma. But it's just the way things unfold. And obviously it is what it is for that situation and having a sunscreen brand. But it's like I'm trying to, you know, raise awareness and benefit other people who don't maybe realize that they do have skin cancer or that they should get checked more often. And the amount of people I've had that reach out that say they wouldn't have until they heard from me in my situation and then they caught themselves. So like that's the kind of stuff I'm trying to do. And it's the same thing with, you know, with that. It's just if you have an opportunity to be involved in something that's unique, that's cool, that it, more importantly for me is I'm passionate about. You know, I'm never going to invest in a company, I'm never going to be a part of something, never want to have my name attached to something if it's not something that I'm passionate about, I want to use, I want to be involved with, and think is going to benefit whatever area that's in, if that makes sense. So I've been very fortunate to play some good golf to get me in some good positions, and it's been fun the last couple of years.
Other questions? We'll go to Cam over here on the left.
A couple questions. What specifically appeals to you about playing in the Monday night tech-infused golf league? And then what are you looking forward to with playing with Jordan against Tiger in the 12-hole match, and how much trash talk do you think there's going to be in that?
Sorry, what was the first part? The fans are a little loud. The first question?
What appeals to you about the Monday night golf tech-infused golf league?
Yeah, I think, I'll answer the easy one, the obvious one first. Jordan and I are very excited, you know, an opportunity for us to play against Tiger and Rory in a scenario situation like that. And I think we all are obviously very close, and we
have an opportunity to just honestly go out like we would us four, go play a practice round and have some kind of match. And I'm sure it'll be very entertaining. And it's just going to be fun for us. I mean, even if it wasn't an event on TV, us four would have a blast going out and playing 12 holes together, let alone under the lights at what sounds like a really cool golf course. So yeah, it'll be a blast. But yeah, I think for the Monday Night League, I think it's just something. It's again, the game of golf is doing so well right now. I think with obviously we've had some things change the last whatever you want to call it year or so, but even now, I think the game of golf is still doing really, really well. And for us to try to take advantage of these opportunities to just widen their horizons and just get the people that are interested and involved in golf outside of golf. And I think that's what a lot of it is. It's, you know, we have a handful, I would call it, of players that are maybe recognized globally, whereas we have a lot of guys that should be thrown in that same kind of category. And I feel like this is something that'll bring in a totally different, entertaining, fun, both for the players, for the people that are physically there watching, and the people that are watching on TV, just some more enjoyment and excitement to the game that will hopefully just continue to take it up and up.
All right, we'll go to Joy right here, and then Doug.
Justin, Tiger was here yesterday and obviously very disappointed that he's not able to play this week. You have been inspired and motivated by Tiger and your peers. What do you guys do to motivate Tiger in moments like this when he has to, after the accident or now when he is not able to? It's just, are you guys just pulling his legs and just making him feel better, or what are you guys doing?
Was that a pun, pulling his legs? Or I'm just sorry, I couldn't resist. No, I mean, first and foremost, it doesn't matter who he is. Like, I just want to be there as his friend. You know, he's obviously very different in terms of stubbornness and how he's always gone about everything. And there's a reason he's the GOAT, is that his mental side of him is unlike anything I've ever seen of anybody I've ever known. So there's not really a whole lot I can bring to the table in that side, but you know, you just want to be there as a friend. You want to be supportive. I want to know that I can help in any way that I can, which he obviously has a team for that. He's got everybody involved. But myself and any of us, you know, it's just reaching out and tell him we're thinking about him. You know, whether it's at home, we go hit balls, we go play golf, we work out, whatever it is. Just, you know, it's not necessarily just doing it to, obviously it's also helped to keep his spirits up and what's going on, but you just want to hang out with him because he's a friend. So, yeah, hopefully he can just keep his spirits up high and continue to improve his foot and get back out here next year.
Doug? Okay, Doug, stage fright.
Oh, Doug.
Just wanted to, in very general terms, how do you look at a year like this where you're a major champion? You and Rory and Tony had a nice go in Canada, but that was really about it.
I mean, I had a very solid beginning of the year. I think I had a handful of top threes or top fives, but it's just a lot of my best play was prior to the PGA. So I think if you took beginning of the season to PGA, I would argue that I played better than anybody. I would say that, yeah, not a lot, but more people had more wins than I did. But in terms of playing golf, I felt that I was playing just as well, if not better than anybody. But unfortunately, that doesn't really get you trophies or points or money. You have to go out and you have to execute the shots when you need to and hit the shot and make the putts and make the mental decisions, all that. And I just wasn't doing that as well last year. It is tough. I've gone back and forth because, yeah, as a whole, if you just first thing that comes to my mind when I think about the year, I think it was pretty average. But I won a major championship. And you know, if you told me every year the rest of my career I did what I did last year, I'd be hard pressed to not take that. But me knowing what I feel like I can do and win multiple times a year, that part's frustrating. But I have to try to look at the positives and realize I won a major championship and had a lot of good things happen.
There's always been a question of whether it can be a great year without winning a major, and I think Tiger once said, if you've won a major, regardless, it's been a great year. Agree or disagree?
If he says it, then it's a great year. He's done it all, so it was a great year. Just, it wasn't average. It was great.
Go to Rex and then Bob.
JT, how complete is your understanding of the PIP and how that list is compiled, or do you just kind of look at it when it comes out and move on?
I have a pretty good understanding. I have enough of an understanding, like anything, that if you play really good golf, everything's going to take care of itself. And I think that's on our side, or my side, what was frustrating before. I know the criteria is changing now, or it changed with the social media aspect, is everybody just thought it was a social media contest. And that's annoying because it's not. Yeah, it was one of the categories, but it's not like, you know, 150th ranked player in the world, the guy who's not winning any tournaments, not finishing top 10 at all, can just go be funny or good on social media and he's in the top 10 of the PIP. Like, that's just not how it works. It's for the people that are selling the tickets. It's for the people that are the reason NBC, CBS, like all these people are signing these, wanting these TV deals. The reason why you all sit in these press conferences, they're the picture, the names and the pictures on tickets each week. Like, they're the people that are selling everything. And it's, I do know that, like, everything in the world, everything in this sport and other sports, if you perform well, you're going to benefit in that. So I don't know if that really answers your question. I have a pretty good idea of what the formula or whatever, what the categories are. I couldn't probably give you a very intelligent description of them all, but I have somewhat of an idea.
And kind of a different question. Tiger was in here yesterday talking about sort of what he's doing with Rory off the golf course as far as leadership goes. How would you describe him as a leader when it comes to what he's doing off the course?
For Tiger? Yeah, it's wild. I mean, I think he's probably been busier this year than he ever has any of the years he's played. And that's just of the stuff I know, let alone the amount of meetings, calls that I don't know. And I think some of y'all might understand, but I had no idea. I know I have, and my mom has talked to him a bunch about his foundation. I mean, the amount of hours and time that he spends every year on his foundation is unbelievable. I think it's grown and become as big, and they've raised however much money they have and have all these, you know, buildings, whatever it is, and continue to build. But that's a lot. That's a toll on you. And he's done it for a long time. And I honestly think he doesn't even get enough credit for that sometimes. And as a player who's playing on this tour and having someone like him going to bat for you and speaking on your behalf and knowing that everything he's saying has myself and all of my peers' best interest in mind, it's pretty cool because, you know, he's Tiger Woods. He doesn't need to do that. He knows how much longer he's going to play. He knows, you know, what his future is going to hold, but he knows how much the PGA Tour has done for him and what the tour has meant to him. And he wants to continue to see it be the best product and the best place to play in the world. And he's putting in a lot of work to make sure that's true.
Bob and then Mark.
Justin, two separate things. One, I'll just follow on Tiger real quick. Obviously, he didn't win this year. He wasn't that competitive. But just where do you rank him returning at all? And you probably know as well as anybody what he was dealing with off the course that a lot of people don't see. To the rest of us, it was kind of a surprise he played the Masters. And just from there on, just to be able to do what he did.
Yeah, there was plenty of times I didn't think he was going to be playing some tournaments last year. But, I mean, him... Well, he made the cut in the Masters and made the cut in the PGA. Like, that's it's pretty insane, actually. I mean, to make the cut of Augusta for, you know, how he felt early in the year, it's mind-blowing, honestly. But he's just – I can't put it into words how much his mind just works in his favor compared to everybody else and how much better it is than everybody else's. I mean, he's a different person when he gets out there, and especially at Augusta, and just all the good vibes and memories and everything he has, but his just when that focus clicks on, it's a different person.
And the other thing was just your reaction to what the tour recently did with the access for college players. You know, I think in your case, you would have benefited from that had mm-hmm. it been in place at the time, and wondered if you might have had any role in helping them, you know, sort of sort that out.
I think it goes hand in hand with what a lot of us said, is that we, with the changes that the tour is kind of going through and has gone through this past, call it 6 months, it's all just to get the best product possible. You know, that's what we want. It's what you guys want. It's what the fans at home want. What the people buying tickets want. That's what everybody wants. And for that, you need, you know, some of the best amateur college players that are coming out to be a part of it. Now, for me, obviously, yeah, I would have loved that. But at the same time, I truly do think a big reason of the success that I had at 23, 24, 25 years old was because of the route that I went. You know, I had to go through Q school, had to earn my web.com then, now Corn Ferry card, had to play a season on the Corn Ferry, had to earn my card. You know, I didn't win, and I learned how to win at the professional level. I had a lot of close calls that I just didn't, you know, that I learned from. And I learned how to travel, you know, how to just everything that comes with being a professional golfer. And I was 20 years old, you know, 21 years old, my first year as a pro. And I don't think I would have handled that very well on the PGA Tour, to be honest. So do I think I would have been okay? Yeah. But I don't know if I would have had the success as early as I did without going the route that I did. Now, that's not saying that other kids can't do it, but I'm just speaking for me personally.
So, Mark, and then we have one in the back.
I'm curious what your impression of Cam Young's ascent has been for a guy that had no status not too long ago mm-hmm. and isn't, you know, obviously now here this week and almost won a couple majors last year.
Yeah, Cam is extremely impressive. He's, you know, he's just very much right here. He's kind of DJ-like of just, you know, just very even keel. He never gets high, never gets low, just... I played with him in the final group on Sunday at Riviera last year. And I remember, you know, I knew he was a rookie. I never met him, never played with him. And I remember the first hole he hit in the front bunker in two. And, I mean, I think Joaquin had a pretty big lead, 4 or 5-shot lead, something like that. And he left that in the bunker. And I remember thinking, like, this is, you know, for a rookie final group of a big event, like, this is about the worst start you could think of. And he hit that one out to about 12 feet and made it for par. I remember kind of thinking, like, oh, wow, you know, that's pretty impressive. And then, you know, a couple holes goes by, makes another birdie. And just all of a sudden we're on, like, 14, and he's, like, two back. And I just, like, looked at Bones. I'm like, this kid's really good. I'm like, he's handled this moment unbelievably. And he continued to do that the rest of the year. You know, it's clear that when he putts well, he's got a very good chance to win. I mean, he hits it so far and so flush. You know, he's one of those guys that you listen to him hit irons, and it's a different sound than a lot of other guys. And yeah, I think he's going to have an unbelievable career.
In the back,
Justin, I just spoke to Victor Hovland. I mean, next year you guys might need to play a bit more than you usually do. What kind of an impact would you have on the preparation for ahead of the majors?
I mean, for me, it's not really too different. But, in terms of the number of events, it would be very similar to what I've played basically every year except for 2020. So it's not really a big difference for me. I'll have to add a couple events maybe that I didn't play in previous years, but it's not really a big difference, at least for me personally. I think it's... There's 30 or 35 events on the PGA Tour I would love to play, but I just can't play due to scheduling. And that's still going to be the case. And, you know, I'm just going to try to get as prepared and ready for each and every one of them as I can.
We'll go to Dylan and then Doug.
You mentioned all the things that you learned going up through Corn Ferry. What did you learn this year?
Oh, what did I learn this year?
probably to not be so hard on myself. I felt like I was really hard on myself this year, and kind of like I was saying to Doug, is I felt like beginning of the year I was playing as good or better than anybody, and I just had no wins to show for it. And I felt like, you know, when you're in those roles, those rhythms, like, you know, like Scotty got on last year, like Rory's on right now, you see Rom get on him like I was on however many years ago, like winning comes easier than it should. And sometimes you just feel like that should happen every time, and that's just not the case. And, you know, I put myself in position quite a few times in the beginning of the year. I didn't shoot the scores when I needed to, or hit the shots or make the putts when I needed to in previous years. And I think I put so much pressure on myself to do it. And then I almost wanted it too bad versus just trusting in myself and believing that, you know, I've worked hard enough. I've put in enough time that I just have to go play golf, just stay present, stay in the moment, and just kind of let it happen as opposed to making it happen, if that makes sense.
All right, got time for two more. We'll go to Doug and then Fatia.
I had just two quick ones off topic. Were you at all nervous on your wedding day?
Not really, no. I wasn't.
Second question is, what is the most money you've ever spent on a sporting ticket?
Most money I've ever spent on a sporting ticket?
You still pay for those?
I was going to say, I don't really pay for tickets anymore, Doug. That's not true. I actually went to a Predators game, and we sat in a suite and found out I got charged for it. So that one. Yeah, I did. I still would have gone, but a little heads up would have been nice.
All right, we'll take our last question here from Fatia. Yeah.
Justin, I asked Tiger and Rory about this before. Do you see any peace restored between LIV Tour and PGA Tour? And do you think Tiger will play a big role in doing that?
Do I see any peace right now? Definitely not. I think they've made that pretty well known. It's not, it doesn't seem they don't really want peace. I still get along with, I've talked to plenty of them. I see some of them, the guys that are playing on LIV, but it doesn't seem that they really want peace. So, and I'm also really not too worried about it. You know, those guys that they're doing their thing, and we're out here trying to do ours and play well. And, you know, we have great leadership and Tiger and Rory, and what they're trying to lead the group of guys out here to create, you know, a great product out here on the PGA Tour. And, you know, we've been the best tour for a very, very long time, and we plan on continuing to be that. So I'm excited about the future. I know that they are too. And, yeah, it is what it is.
All right, Justin, thank you very much for your time.
The weather is changing, but you know what hasn't changed for a long time? Your underwear. If you're still rocking worn-out cotton undies, now's the time for a new pair of Tommy John's Apollo men's underwear. In Tommy John's underwear, you're that much more comfortable, so you can do everything better. Name a problem with other underwear, and Tommy John's has solved it. Tommy John's breathable, lightweight fabric has four times the stretch of competing brands. They come with a no-wedgie guarantee, thanks to a non-rolling waistband and legs that never ride up. Plus, they feature a horizontal, quick-draw fly. And Tommy John loungewear is guaranteed to fit perfectly with comfy, non-piling, micro-modal fabric, meaning no lint balls or fuzz. That's what that means, no lint balls or fuzz, folks. And a luxuriously soft tri-blend fabric with flexible four-way stretch. Folks, I wear Tommy John's. The entire crew wears Tommy John's. And we all love them. We have one of everything, I believe, in their entire product line. So guess what else is out there for you? It's backed with Tommy John's best pair you'll ever wear, or it's free guarantee. So here's what I want you to do. Go to TommyJohn.com/golftalk right now for 25% off lounge and sleepwear. That's 25% off lounge and sleepwear at TommyJohn.com/golftalk. That's TommyJohn.com/golftalk. See sites for details.
All right, we'll take some questions out here. If you have a question, we'll get a microphone to you. We'll start with Dylan and then Doug.
Tiger, first of all, just how are you feeling, and then what went into the decision to withdraw this week?
Well, it was a tough decision just because I want to play. I like playing, I like competing, but unfortunately, I can hit the golf ball and hit whatever shot you want. I just can't walk. And so I've had a few setbacks during the year that I still was able to somehow play through, but this one I just can't. I just... only time can heal this one and stay off my feet and get a lot of treatment done.
And was it a surprise to you going into this week that you weren't able to play, or you know, when did you make this decision?
Well, as I was ramping up and I had to walk more, the worse it got. So when you get plantar fasciitis, the worst thing you can do is walk. And I was walking more and more and more, trying to get my legs ready for this event, and I just kept making it worse. Had to shut it down and unfortunately be the host of the event and Ranger Rick out here. So I can do that.
Doug?
That's kind of what I was going to ask, but following on the health theme, Rory had some comments about COVID at St. Andrews, and I was just curious your recollection of that, if you know what I'm talking about. Were you actually ever tested?
Yeah, I got tested, and I was always negative. I was feeling under the weather, yes. Wasn't feeling great a whole week, but I never got a positive test.
Okay. And then kind of in a broader sense, Tiger, if you can go back to a year ago sitting at this table, what's transpired since then? Your own health, your play, the Saudi League, the meeting, the reshaping of the PGA Tour. If you were to go back a year ago and look into the future, what are those kind of surprises you the most, or what didn't you see coming?
For me, I was hoping to maybe play the British Open. I ended up playing three majors, which is not too bad, all things considered. Wasn't expecting to have a few more procedures because of playing, but that's just the way it goes. As far as the golf ecosystem, I don't think any of us would have foreseen it being as complicated as it is and convoluted as it has become. And the animosity from both sides. I don't think we would have seen that a year ago. Well, I see that there's an opportunity out there if both organizations put a stay on their litigation, but that's the problem. They got to put a stay on it. And whether or not they do that or not, there's no willingness to negotiate if you have a litigation against you. So if they both have a stay and then have a break and then they can meet and figure something out, then maybe there is something to be had. But I think Greg has to go, first of all, and then obviously the litigation against us and then our countersuit against them. Those would then have to be at a stay as well. So then we can talk. We can all talk freely.
We'll go to Rex and then Adam.
Tiger, along those same lines, the meeting in Delaware back in August that you and Rory went to, why do you think it was important for you to be in that meeting, and what was your message to the other players?
Well, the message is that we can't compete dollar for dollar with PIF. We physically can't do that. But what we can do is talk about better opportunities for younger players getting onto the tour and what it means to play the tour, how important it is, how important it is to have a legacy, be able to win major championships. As of right now, we don't know where the major championships stand on this. So if you're a tour player, you already know that you're in the major championships, you're in the top 50. So, okay, that's a guarantee. But the other players don't. They're taking a chance of never, ever, ever getting a chance to play major championships. And so where does your legacy stand there? You know, I went on a tour, made a lot of money, but I never got to win any tournaments that are of value that would put me in the Hall of Fame and things of that nature. So yes, there was a lot of talk of that, and ways in which we can increase purses, reward players that are more visible than others, that drive the tour, reward them, and also give better access to the tour at different ages and in different ways than we ever have in the past. So it was a long meeting. A lot of different options were put about, and we all had to think about it, sit back, and then we've had many subsequent meetings, FaceTime meetings, trying to figure it out and make it better, and we also worked with the tour to try and make it better as well.
We'll go to Adam and then Dan.
Could you have played this week with a golf cart?
Say again?
Could you have played this week with a golf cart?
Yeah.
But you won't. You won't play this week, but you would at the father-son?
I can't hear you.
He's saying you didn't want to play this week with a golf cart, but you can at the father-son.
Yeah, it's the father-son is a sanctioned senior event, so they can all use golf carts.
Okay. And also, how have you justified this event getting official World Golf ranking points, and would you be willing to relinquish that in the future?
Now, can you?
Okay. The question was, would you be willing to relinquish the world ranking points in the future? And in Adam's words, how do you justify this event getting world ranking points?
Oh, yeah. We got world ranking points with this event with Sun City as well at the same time. We had increased field sizes, and the World Golf body said that you basically had to have their tournament running for, I think it's 3 years, and we'd already had it running for like 15 years, both events. And so both events were elevated to world ranking points.
We'll go to Dan next.
Have your doctors told you that the plantar fasciitis is related to the other injuries in the foot?
Yes, it is.
And so does that impact your long-term prognosis for returning to competitive golf, playing, you know, 72 holes and walking over and over again?
Yeah, I can hit golf balls. It's the walking that just hurts. So that's just something that when you got plantar fasciitis, the only thing you can do is rest and try and stretch that out as best as possible. But it's rest. I mean, how do you rest when you're hosting a tournament? It's hard. So this will be a tough week. The father-son will be a very easy week. Charlie will just hit all the shots, and I'll just get the putts out of the hole. So pretty easy there. But other than that, you know, in the match we're playing, and we're flying in carts, 12 holes. So.
And I wanted to ask you about the Player Impact Program. You won it again this year. The tour announced that last week. I think you've played 9 competitive rounds over the last 2 years and won it both times. This program, when you see it come to fruition now, do you wish it was there when you were younger? Do you understand why it has to happen now? What are your kind of thoughts on the Player Impact Program?
Everything evolves. I mean, look at the FedEx iterations we've had. One of the years, BJ didn't even have to tee it up. You know, he didn't even have to show up for the last tournament or season-ending event, and he already won the FedEx Cup. So we've had different iterations of the FedEx Cup, and there's no difference with the PIP. I'm sure we're going to have different iterations of that going forward as well. There is no perfect system. You want people who drive the tour who are most visible, and the people that watch golf because of these certain players be rewarded for it. We haven't found the perfect model for that yet, and hopefully we do sometime soon. We're still working on it.
Go to Dave and then Ewan.
Tiger, two quick things. First of all, you know, there is talk about the OWGR as it relates to LIV Golf, and is it becoming irrelevant? You know, they don't meet a lot of the criteria that have been set forward. Do you have an opinion about what you see for the OWGR going forward and the LIV argument?
What do I see going forward with?
What the OWGR, is it relevant?
Yeah.
Is it?
Well, the OWGR, it's a flawed system. You know, that's something we all here recognize. The field at Dubai got less points than Sea Island, and more of the best top players were there in Dubai. So obviously there's a flawed system. How do you fix it? You know, those are meetings we're going to have. We're going to have it with World Golf Committee, and as well as the main tours are involved in it, somehow come up with a better system than is in place now. I remember in my career when I I had a big lead in my career, and I didn't have to play a single tournament the next year, and I still would be ranked number one. We changed that system then. So it has been changed in the past, and I'm sure this will be changed hopefully soon.
Secondly, what is your goal for next year as far as how much you want to play, and if you can play the schedule you want to, what does that look like, and what is the goal? I assume you're not going just to show up.
The goal is to play just the major championships and maybe one or two more. That's it. I mean, that's physically, that's all I can do. And I told you that, guys, you know, the beginning of this year, too. I mean, I don't have much left in this leg. So gear up for the biggest ones, and hopefully, you know, lightning catches in a bottle. And I'm up there in contention with a chance to win, and hopefully I remember how to do that. But, you know, giving myself a chance to get out there again. I didn't expect to play three majors this year. We were hoping for just the British Open, but I was able to get two more in there. So that was a big positive.
You and Mark, and then Martin.
Tiger, just linked to, straight in front of you. Sorry. Just linked to that point. I mean, you spoke at St. Andrews when we last saw you about the struggle to play in the majors this year, and we witnessed that a lot of the time. You must have worked incredibly hard to get to the point where you could almost play here, and now you can't play. Is there never a part of you that thinks, why keep going? Why keep trying this? I've got nothing else to prove.
Well, I love competing. You know, I love this sport. I've been playing it for basically all my life. And, you know, actually, I've been a pro for more than half my life. And so if you look at it in those terms, you know, I've been a part of the sport and I've loved it. It's just unfortunate I'm not able to do the things that I feel mentally I can do. The body just kind of rejects it. You know, when I was at home, I was shooting 4, 5, 6, 7 under par like it was nothing, but I was in a cart. Now you add in walking, and that goes away. So I need to get to where that point is where I can actually walk around and play that way like all of you guys can. I'm not able to do that right now.
Mark, and then Martin. Mark right here.
Hey, Tiger. How are you?
Yeah.
I have two questions unrelated. One of which is years ago when Tim Finchem was the commissioner, if I'm not mistaken, you were trying to make some inroads, you know, for the top players were drawing most of the eyeballs to the game to be compensated more, you know, because they were using your likeness and image on, you know, every brochure, et cetera, back in the day brochures. What changed for you with that? Because obviously that's part of the reason, you know, the group that went to LIV, like Phil, try to shake the tree a little bit. I'm just kind of curious where that changed for you, and you know, and why that wasn't a big, not.
Well, I think in order to compete, I mean, it's always good to have competition in the sport, and obviously LIV has changed the ecosystem, you know, of our game. I remember originally that the Akron event, the Bridgestone tournament, was supposed to be the payment of players for playing on the teams. You're not going to get paid for being on Ryder Cup or President's Cup team, but here's your payment by playing in Bridgestone. Mm-hmm. Obviously, that changed quickly. But yes, there's been some ebb and flow, some give and take with the players and the commissioners and their staff. And I think this year, more so than any other time, that we've had the openness to be able to talk to our commissioner and say, hey, these are things that we want to get better on the tour. And here's a list of them in priority, too. Mm-hmm. And Jay sat through a lot of these meetings, a lot of the conference calls, and with Rory and I talking to him, too, as well. I think we made some great changes. But how do we also replenish the players that have left? It's obviously giving more opportunities for players that are coming into the game that are younger, collegiate or amateur, more access to it. The game has gotten younger, period. Mm-hmm. And the guys are winning majors in their mid-early 20s. But also we want to get younger kids coming in here and playing the game of golf and experiencing the tour and experiencing what it's like to play major championships and hopefully win them.
And just as a follow there, part of those changes you talked about, there's a lot more money coming into tournaments from the tour that weren't, you know, available, so to speak, before LIV came around. And a guy like, you know, like Mickelson, for example, obviously is the face of that. and he took a lot of criticism. He's taken most of the bullets for that, so to speak. And he's criticized heavily by players on tour for it, who now will be making a lot more money at tournaments because of him shaking that tree. Do you feel like, to some degree, they owe an apology for that? Or
no, absolutely not. No, we took out an enormous loan during the pandemic, in which that if we had another year of the pandemic, our tour would only be sustained for another year. So we took out an enormous loan. It worked. It paid off in our benefit. Hence, we were able to use that money to make the increases that we made.
All right, we'll go to Martin over there.
Tiger, you've had a few months to reflect on making it to St Andrews. When you look back now, what did that week mean to you? And has it made you more determined maybe to go back one more time?
Well, I don't know. To be honest with you, I don't know if I'll be able to make it back one more time as a player in the tournament. Whether I might... You know, I probably will go back and play it at some point with Charlie and have a great time. But, I mean, I think it's, 8 years away, I believe. I don't know what this leg is going to look like in 8 years. Hopefully still attached. But we'll see. And I just don't want to go back and just say farewell. I mean, I want to win the damn thing. I mean, that's what I thought I could do this year. I was doing everything right, and then all of a sudden it just... My leg just wasn't working properly, so and hence I missed the cut badly.
We'll go over here on the left to Todd Lewis.
Hi, Tiger. In regards to the dynamics between the PGA Tour and LIV Golf, what do you hope personally the end game will be?
Between the R2 tours?
Correct.
We don't know. No one knows. Right now, there's a lot of animosity. Especially from their leadership, and they want to be a validated tour with world ranking points, and they're buying up tours around the world. And I don't know what their end game is. It might be just being an official member of the golf ecosystem and being recognized with world ranking points. I think that's where their intended goal is. They've spent probably close to $2 billion this year. Who's to say they can't spend $4 or $5 billion next year? You know, we just don't know. It's an endless pit of money. But that doesn't necessarily create legacies either. You want to compare yourself to Hogan. You want to compare yourself to Snead. You want to compare yourself to Nicklaus. You can't do that over there, which you can on this tour.
Do you think these organizations can coexist?
Right now, as it is, not right now, not with their leadership, not with Greg there and his animosity towards the tour itself, I don't see that happening. As Rory said, and I said it as well, I think Greg's got to leave. And then we can eventually, hopefully, have a stay between the two lawsuits and figure something out. But why would you change anything if you got a lawsuit against you? Now, they sued us first.
Tiger, two separate things. Had you seen improvement since St. Andrews in your leg progressing
Yes.
over the last couple of months before this latest setback? And how much does this mean you've regressed?
It's going to take probably a month or two of rest. But also, it was the ramping up process that did it. It's a balancing act, right? How hard do you push it to make progress? When you're not pushing it too hard, you go off the edge and you set yourself back 2-3 days. And that's been the balancing act all year. And trying to do that, get ready for this event. I did a lot of beach walks, trying to simulate the sand out here. And my foot just did not like that very much.
And secondly... you just referenced it with the litigation, and until that's gone, there's really nothing that can happen talking-wise with LIV. But if that did happen, you must have an idea of something that you think where they could work together, if you're even willing to talk. What would that be? How could these two entities coexist?
As I said, I think it has to start with leadership on their side, understanding that what is happening right now is not in the best. It's not in the best fit or future for the whole game of golf. Now, what is the best way for our game to grow? It's not this way. But granted, you need to have the two bodies come together. And if one side has so much animosity, starting trying to destroy our tour, then how do you work with that?
We'll go to Doug right here.
Early on when you were talking about your year in golf, you mentioned a couple of procedures that you had this year. I'm not sure I was aware of those. What procedures did you have?
Yeah, I had a couple surgeries, yes.
What, can you elaborate?
Nope.
Can you say when?
In the past.
In the past.
This year.
Thank you, Bones.
You're welcome.
And then, this may sound odd, but what was the best shot you hit this year? It was a short menu, but surely there was something.
Officially the best shot I hit all year? I know. I mean, it's hard to say. I only played like three rounds, so. I know that the worst break I got this year, I hit a nice 4-iron right down the middle of the fairway on one at St. Andrews. It was in a divot. So that was probably the worst break. We will work backwards from there.
Got time for a couple more. We'll go to Bernie.
Tiger, good to see you again, of course, and thanks for your time this morning. You talked about Rory. Rory seems to be the unofficial sort of spokesperson for the PGA Tour. I know you two guys get on pretty well, but how much do you admire him for for the stance he's taken, and particularly his comments in Dubai about my compatriot who should take the stage left? How much do you sort of admire Rory for his, what he's saying about what's going on and things like that?
What Rory has said and done or what leaders do. And Rory is a true leader out here on tour. The fact that he's actually able to get the things he said out in the public eye and be so clear-minded with it and so eloquent with it. Meanwhile, go out there and win golf tournaments on top of that. People have no idea how hard that is to do, be able to separate those two things. But he's been fantastic. He's a great leader in our calls we make. And then he's a great leader with all the players out here. Everyone respects him. And that's they respect him because not just his ball striking, his driving, but the person he is.
Just quickly, with probably a month to go before the end of this year, and in a sentence, how would you surmise what's taken place off the course this year with men's professional golf?
I'm sorry?
How would you surmise what has been taking place with men's professional golf this year, the sort of controversy, just the whole sort of thing that's gone on?
Well, I think this whole year has been, it's a year that we didn't expect to have happen. For, as I said, the animosity, the angst, and then the players leaving, and then the way they show their disregard or disrespect to the tour that helped them get to that point. I certainly, there's a lot of things I certainly don't like about it. And there are certain players that are very upfront with it and have declared it. And I respect them for that. But there's also a flip side to that, too, that I thought was a little bit on a tasteless side.
We'll go to Patia and then Joy.
Tiger, you have huge legacy with your foundation and what you did with golf in the past. Mm-hmm. Do you think or you would be happy to add one to this with making a role of peacemaker with what happened right now?
Well, I don't know if it's whether it's going to be me, Rory, or the tour or other players being, I wasn't necessarily a peacemaker, but I just think that there's a window, I think, of opportunity for us from both tours to figure this out shortly, but I think that window's closing just because the majors are coming up now and they're going to have their own criteria for the majors, but if they can do it quickly before that. But again, that goes back to Liv and their lawsuit. They are suing us first, and then we countersue them. So they have to back off the table, then we'll back off the table, and then we have a place to talk. But their leadership has to change as well. And if that doesn't, then I think it's going to continue to go down the path that it's going right now.
Joy, and then Dan.
Tiger, there was a time when most players would come and ask you about golf swing and other stuff. Is it Do you find there's a difference now? Because, like, I mean, I was talking to Arjun and he was telling me that he has spoken to you a lot about his golf swing because of his back injury.
Yeah.
Have you found that players are now coming to you like a Dr. Tiger Woods? Can you tell us if we have this injury, what can we do with our swing? Do you find that change?
It's very respectful. It is neat, yes. I've had a few players that have come over the house and wanted to work on some stuff in the backyard with me, and they have, and then, you know, they've made some positive strides, which I'm excited about. I help them, so it's nice to be able to be on that seat, but I'd much rather be competing against them.
There are 206 bones in the body. Do you know each one of them by now?
No, I know each of the one that hurts. So, okay.
Dan?
Yeah, two really, really quick questions. Tiger, right?
Yeah.
In the heyday, 2001, 2002, were you ever approached about starting your own tour?
No, never.
And the second question is there ever a scenario in which you would take a golf cart during competition?
Take golf or what?
Take a golf cart during competition on the PGA Tour. Could you ever see that happening?
No, on the PGA Tour, no. On a sanctioned events where it's allowed, yes, which is the Champions Tour, PNC, things of that nature. But, you know, my teammate was Casey Martin, okay? You know, and what he did with the ADA, I voted against it. I think golf is an integral part of the game and at our level. And I will never take a golf cart until it's a sanctioned where it's sanctioned. And it's sanctioned on the Champions Tour, and then, you know, PNC is part of that. So, as far as a regular event, no, I would never do that.
All right, that's all the time we have. Thank you very much for your time, Tiger and Dr. Munjal.
Thank you.
So, there you go. There you have it. You've heard from all three of the boys, and it's off to the tournament. It's going to be a great tournament this week. Looking forward to a highly anticipated Sunday finish. Who's going to win it? Scotty? Justin? John? Tiger's already won. He's sitting in the clubhouse having a great time. You're going to get to hear him on Sunday alongside the NBC commentators. And I think it's going to be a pretty interesting overview of golf. So, for Tim Matthews, the Golf Talk America crew, I'm Frank Bassett. Thank you for listening, and tune in next for the next edition of Golf Talk America.